This episode of TortureCast was brought to you by SportsBettingDime.com. They have the odds for the MLB season to be played and much more. Check them out at www.SportsBettingDime.com/MLB.
Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Wednesday, June 17th, 2020, and this is episode 196 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and down in Vegas, Las Vegas, where I want to go. I really do. I miss it. I miss it. I miss the people. I miss the gambling. I miss the drinking. I miss the fun. I miss the debauchery. Are you being debaucherous down there, Eric?
I have not. I'm keeping it clean.
All right, good. Good. You don't want to be down there and sell your soul to the devil that quickly. Give it a few months.
Well, as my mother said to me before we moved out here, be careful. There's a lot of temptations. So I'm trying to keep it together so far. But there, you know, everything you just listed off is already definitely back up and running here in Vegas. I got to tell you, the place is kind of hopping already, and there's people like they're just going out and having a good time. My brother-in-law drives for Lyft. Casinos opened at midnight on June 4th. He was driving somebody home drunk from the casino at 8 a.m. on June 4th.
That's right. We recorded on June 3rd, so we recorded the day before. I guess it was that night that they were opening up. So yeah. It's been real interesting. I mean, you definitely have the pulse on it, but just from my far, you know, vantage point, seeing the videos of people just walking around without masks and totally not social distancing. This is going to be one interesting couple of months to see if Vegas spikes here. But yep. I'm glad you're staying safe and kind of staying away from those crazy situations. That's good. So everyone out there, please continue to be smart. I know we all have this pandemic fatigue. I get it. Me and my kids, we're going crazy. My wife, we're all going crazy. We want to just get out. We want to travel. We want to go to, you know, we just want to go enjoy our lives. And we got to be careful here. That's all. Speaking of being careful, holy crap, we decided to record on a day where everything's going crazy in Major League Baseball. In the last 2 weeks, there's been a lot of developments, but certainly the last 48 hours. Where did we leave off 2 weeks ago, Eric? We were talking about how both the owners and the players just couldn't seem to come to agreement, even though there was a loose agreement, a binding agreement in March that required the players be paid their prorated salaries. Of course, the owners said, well, yeah, but that's because we didn't know that fans weren't coming in. And because fans aren't going to be coming in, we're losing our shirts off of this. So you need to share some of that pain. We'll give you 70%. Here's a tiered structure. And of course, players went, no, screw you guys. So there's been a little bit of back and forth there. But what was really interesting is just a few days ago, Rob Manfred, of course, commissioner of baseball, who does work for the owners. Let me remind you, he works for the owners, not the players and not the fans. He works for the owners. He said he was 100% certain that there would be a season this year. And that's because they could essentially mandate the season schedule and then still pay the players their prorated salaries. It just may have been down to like 50 games or even 48 games or less. But then as talks broke down again just 2 days ago, Manfred said, I'm not 100% confident that we're going to have a season. And this had more to do with him laying blame on Tony Clark, who is the MLB Players Association rep, union head, saying that basically the blame was on him, that they weren't realizing all of the pain that the owners would have to go through and they need to share some of this burden. But it really has to do with waiving their legal rights as well in terms of this pandemic and what have you. So there's been a lot of back and forth, and we were going to go into all of that today. But I think what's more important right now, because after that, I should say Tony Clark did issue a statement, and this is what it was. Quote, players are disgusted that after Rob Manfred unequivocally told players and fans that there would 100% be a 2020 season, he has decided to go back on his word and is now threatening to cancel the entire season. Any implication that the Players Association has somehow delayed progress on health and safety protocols is completely false. As Rob has recently acknowledged, the parties are very, very close. This latest threat is just one more indication that Major League Baseball has been negotiating in bad faith since the beginning. This has always been about extracting additional pay cuts from players, and this is just another day and another bad faith tactic in their ongoing campaign. So, I mean, I don't know about you, Eric, but the public perception, I still think most of the public and most baseball fans are putting the blame squarely on, or mostly on, the owners' shoulders. But the owners do hold a lot of leveraging power here, and they're using that tactic to try and get what they want.
They are, but it seems, I agree. I think that the baseball media has done a good job of framing this correctly. I mean, it's always touching when certain stories are covered by media members, because there's a thin line you have to walk. You don't want to upset the ball club itself, because you don't want to lose privileges, but then again, you do feel protected, because this is America, to have those. But I mean, certain privileges could be restricted. We've seen it happen. We've seen clubhouse access get stripped from reporters before. And I'm impressed that the baseball media has seemed to take it upon themselves to show the fans that it seems to be the owners who have been negotiating in bad faith, who have not wanted to be adherent. They didn't want to adhere to the original deal that was laid out back in March as far as prorating. They decided to, as we've said before, move the goalposts along the way. And I think that that's why everybody does see the with wide open eyes that the owners seem to be the most at fault. Like, I get it. People don't want to hear millionaires squabbling over millions of dollars to play a game. But you have to put yourself in their shoes as an employee, because most of us are employees. Most of us are not the boss. Most of us are employees. We work for somebody else. But the difference between what I bring to the table for, say, a grocery store and what Chris Bryant brings to the table for the Chicago Cubs are two completely different things. Because at the grocery store, you come in to buy a product, and I help you with your milk, eggs, and cheese. For the Cubs, Chris Bryant's their product. If Chris Bryant leaves, the product leaves. And you might get an inferior product. So you might be getting the, not the knockoff brand, but you could end up with the knockoff brand. And so to think of it from the employee perspective, it's not millionaires squabbling over millions of dollars. They just want to rightfully have contracts that they have signed to be honored on a prorated basis. They're totally okay with the prorated. The players have said it. You know, they understand what's going on. They're willing to take concessions. But the owners are sitting out here, and they just agreed to a deal with TBS for more TV money for the playoffs for like another 5 years. Yeah. You're over here negotiating new TV deals, but saying, oh, poor us, we need the ticket money. And that's where the bad faith comes from. And that's why players seem to be getting most of the support, and that's why I appreciate the baseball media. I don't know if we're, you know, a part of that as far as framing the conversation, but I mean, I agree. The players are the ones kind of getting screwed, and that's why, you know, where is it? Tell us when and where, Tony Clark said in the statement. Tell us when and where has become the rallying cry for players, because they just want to play. It's like you and me. I just want to get back to work. You know, not everybody loves their job, but everybody knows when they're good at their job, and they want to go out and earn and provide for their family. So tell us when and where. And I think that that really has helped align the fans with the players in this way. I feel like we are at the Astrodome watching the Bad News Bears, and we're all in the crowd chanting, let them play.
Oh, man, this is quite the story. I mean, things looked really, really bad just even 12 hours ago, 5 hours ago. But there definitely has been some breaking news, and it could be because of the way that the public has perceived this, that you just eloquently kind of wrapped up with the baseball media. Maybe Manfred is like, crap. Yeah, it does look bad for us. Maybe we need to do something here. So apparently this morning, he and Tony Clark had a secret meeting in Arizona. He has just recently released a statement, but they have put in a framework for both owners and players to agree on playing a season. There are no details out yet, but there are, and this is all breaking news, by the way, so I may get some of this wrong. Eric, you can correct me, but as far as I understand it right now, it would be for full prorated salaries, number one. That's what the players have always wanted. Number two, the season would be approximately 60 to 70 games long, which is more than the previous proposal by the owners, which is good. And third, they would be expanding. Okay, so of course, we're used to the 10-game playoff. They were talking about a 14-game playoff previously. Now they're talking about a 16-team playoff. I think I said game. 16-team playoff. That is absolutely insane. And then, of course, the players would waive their right to sue if they get COVID or something like that.
Okay, see, that's where I'm a little caught up, because I've been wondering, I thought that part of the grievance is that they cannot file a collective bargaining grievance against Major League Baseball if this is the framework that they come to.
Okay, and maybe that's what it specifically applies to, not right, a grievance that, for this, right? So they don't have a strike at the end of the season or something.
Exactly,
like that.
And I think that's what they're trying to prevent, because as we've laid out before, the CBA is coming up again soon, and they're going to have negotiations soon, and that's kind of part of what's made the owners drag their feet here.
Yeah. Wow. This is crazy, but you know, if the framework is in place, I think Hank Shulman just tweeted this out, his own article in the Chronicle, but says Major League Baseball Players Association is reviewing a new proposal from the commissioner's office that, if accepted, would result in a shortened 2020 season that seemed hopeless as recent as a day ago. So a knowledgeable source who requested anonymity because he was not authorized to speak publicly confirmed the development, saying that the proposal follows a, quote, jointly developed framework, and that he and the union chief, Tony Clark, devised a face-to-face meeting, or this is what they did during the meeting on Tuesday. So, pretty cool. Now, they did say the reports of an agreement are false, but nevertheless, maybe an unofficial agreement hasn't been made yet, but the framework has been put in place, and I guess the proposal is going to be reviewed by the Players Association.
That phrase, really, though, framework, yeah. It hadn't popped up in previous statements and leaks over the last couple of months. Framework really makes it sound like they actually have an idea of something in place more so than they have at any other time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm are you hopeful? I don't know. That's the thing. I want to get hopeful. I really do. I swear I told you, I was out and about before we recorded, and I felt like every time I got my car open Twitter, and it's like, we're having a season. We're not having a season. Well, maybe we're having a season. Nope. We haven't agreed to anything yet. Oh, wait, there's a framework. It's been a rough roller coaster as a baseball fan of emotions. Like, they've been jerking us around for weeks here, and this seems like the culmination of it all. I mean, are you excited? Do you think baseball is going to come back here, or do you think that this is just another bump in the road towards no season?
Yeah, it definitely sounds like the season will start. At least the chances of it are a lot greater now. If the owners do, you know, agree on this prorated salary and everything is ironed out, it does sound like there's really good positive news here. And the season could start in mid-July to late July, something like that. But Eric, you and I were talking about this before the show, and we're seeing a lot of the country becoming very lax about this virus. And that directly impacts baseball, because even though the owners specifically feared a second wave just naturally happening in the fall, which is very typical of pandemics, which granted they only happen every century or so. These are typical patterns that happen with the Spanish flu of 1918 as well. There was a spring first wave. It settled down in the summer, and then it spiked to even a worse wave, a higher wave. More people got sick and died during the second wave because people are indoors. They're with each other. There's just more human contact, and it's colder outside, and that's the reason why. So even though the owners and I think a lot of scientists fully expected a second wave in the fall, they were hoping to squeeze the baseball season in prior to that happening. With these new developments that are indicating that some of the states that opened up are starting to see spikes and increased hospitalization rates, and more people we see are walking around town without masks and gathering. I mean, I have a lot of friends that are now gathering together and having, you know, barbecues at their houses, and they're not distancing. They're taking pictures shoulder and shoulder, you know, arms around each other, that kind of thing, with kids running around. It scares me. It really scares me that this second wave is going to come a lot earlier than we thought. And if that happens, I do agree with you. I think baseball is going to have to shut down, like a lot of the economy is going to have to. And in addition to that, they have to have all these protocols and safety things put in place, which we've talked about ad nauseum in previous episodes. But, you know, what if, you know, a star gets sick? I know they're going to be replaced and they're going to be in isolation and we can move on, but that's kind of a big, big flag. And I think that's going to be really interesting to see what happens if a Mike Trout gets sick. Or conversely, instead of a star or two becoming sick, it's half a team. What happens then? What if it goes rips through a clubhouse? And then we joked about this. What if one of the older managers or coaches gets it and then is hospitalized and, God forbid, dies? What happens then? I mean, there's all these potential pathways of disaster that they do have me scared. But nonetheless, I'm encouraged to see a season, you know, progress towards reality here.
I mean, that the thing with it is, though, is I have a tough time just, I mean, envisioning it lasting. This is where South Korea, they've got their baseball going. They don't have fans. You know, you've shared it. They've got SpongeBob characters in the stands. They, you know, the players are not really social distancing during the game. I mean, you do when you're in the field because that's just how baseball diamond's set up. But they've been all right. We haven't heard of anything and anything like that. This is where I'm trying to straddle the line here for a second. This is where if we had better things set up in this country in general when it came to this disease, we'd have a better opportunity to avoid this wave and have a baseball season without an interruption or complications. But because of the certain lack of things that were able to be put in place to help us as a whole as a country and the absolute way it has been mishandled has caused baseball to have to react like this. And I think that kind of, you know, baseball can't, this is the hand they're being dealt. You know what I mean? And if the hand they're being dealt is to play 2 months and then just like everything else shut down again, I think they're just willing to do that and let the hand be dealt. As Jason Stark said, he talked to a high ranking MLB official who said, you know, yeah, I'm pretty sure the MLB season is going to start. Whether or not it's still going in 2 months, I have no idea.
Oh, what a Charlie Foxtrot. Again, it's going to be great to hear the crack of the bat if that does indeed happen in July. But yeah, come September, God knows what's going to be, you know, happening around here.
I mean, that it's just, you know, and I'm trying, you know, I know people understand what I'm saying. I'm just trying to straddle the line saying that if our country had a better handle on this, we would have a better way to handle the baseball season at this point.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
I guess that's all I'm really trying to say. And I'm frustrated as a baseball fan that this is where we are right now because I can love baseball with all my heart. It belongs to me, it belongs to you, it belongs to everybody because we all played it, we all experienced it. And so to have them fighting over it like this, you know, it kind of stabs at the little kid in you. And, you know, I want baseball. I know you want baseball. You know, I think that's what's missing a lot of days when I'm trying to figure out what to do. I'm like, oh, wait a second. I'd usually be watching a ball game now. So I miss it. And that's why we feel so, at least I do. That's why I feel so strongly about just wanting it back. And that's why the reactions will come strongly when it's, are they having a season? Are they not having a season?
I was thinking to myself, first of all, I forgot about something, but New Zealand, granted, the United States is a lot bigger than New Zealand. There's a lot more travel than New Zealand. I get it. And the United States is probably a lot more diverse than New Zealand. But that said, they were able to squash this virus. They had it there. They eliminated it. They have no new cases. They're back. And so they're actually going to be having rugby games and other athletic competitions in front of stands, like fans in the stands. They're going to be going back to like real life because they took this seriously and they squashed this virus. It doesn't mean that it can't flare up again from someone coming in from outside the country, but they have a bunch of protocols in place to try and prevent that from happening. But like you said, and again, I'm not trying to get too political. It's just the facts. It's just facts. This country messed that up, messed it up, disregarded the threat and let it basically take root. And now we're seeing the fruits of our own countrymen, Americans that are basically disregarding it because, oh, I'm tired of this. Well, great. This isn't going to help it go away. Just ignoring it. So, yeah, and that has repercussions on all of our lives, but of course, on the things that we love. Like you just said, baseball is like near and dear to our heart. And aside from the 1994 season, which was you know, traumatically cut short from the strike, that was a, you know, a man-made thing. The players basically were like, okay, we're done. We're going to walk away. And they did, and it hurt, and it sucked, and it took many years for fans to come back in the stands. Probably steroids had a big part of that,
yeah,
which is interesting. But this is going to be interesting because, you know, maybe we'll have a World Series winner this year. Maybe not, depending on if they come to agreement, if there's a pandemic and we shut down, or a second wave and we shut down, and all that stuff. But this is leading into the CBA that has to be renegotiated next year. And there's going to be a lot of hurt feelings no matter what. And there's going to be a lot of lost money no matter what. And I wonder how this is going to impact those negotiations going into next year, which could affect, you know, the 2022 season or the 2021 season. So that's going to really suck. But looking at a 16-team playoff, Eric, I mean, you have teams in the NHL and the NBA that get into the playoffs under 500. Now this has opened the door for this is going to happen in Major League Baseball. The problem I have, and you just tweeted this out earlier about the Marlins and the Mariners, I loved it, is if you have a couple of these teams, and I guess it's not if, it will happen, that are under 500 that get into the playoffs, even if they have the toughest playoff road by not having a bye and all this stuff that they've proposed, it's a different sport. And I think you and I can recognize that, and most baseball fans can recognize that. When you have, you know, it's rare that a number one seed loses to a number eight seed in most other sports because there's just a domination of the team factor, right? Especially with the NBA, especially with the NHL. But NBA, I mean, you know, when the Warriors are number one seed, when, you know, the Bulls were the number one seed.
Yeah, they ran right over.
They just ran right through it. There's not as much variability in the outcomes of the games because of the team that can control that trajectory. It's five guys normally with obviously two or so bench supporters that have key roles. But for the most part, it's kind of a known outcome. That's why betting, I shouldn't say betting, but setting the line for basketball is a lot easier than setting a line for baseball. Baseball is just so many variables and so many things that can control it, from fraction of inches on the bat to win to, of course, the number one is the pitcher of the day, right? Pitcher of the day is on. Even if he's a number five starter, he can win that. He can beat any team that day. If a couple players get hot and the other players get cold on the other team, same thing. It's just way, way more variable. And I am really wondering if there could be a Marlins Mariners World Series, because you get one of those sub 500 teams and they just pick it up and get hot and they run through the playoffs and become champs. That's going to be weird, man. It's going to be really weird.
You talk about it.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
Pitch. I mean, it'd be fun. That's the thing. Like, I'm more curious and excited. I would love to see a 66 game season, 16 playoff field, just for the fun of it. Yeah. Like, I already know this year is screwed up. Like, I get it. You know, I figured that out months ago. You know, I'm sitting here in Nevada. I used to live in Georgia, and it's because of the things that changed in the world. It's like unbelievable. So I get that the world is different nowadays. So the baseball season is going to be different. So let's just be as wacky as possible. Like, I don't mind it. But, I mean, your point about pitching is 100% correct. That's the variable that other sports don't have. You know, in football, if Jimmy G isn't working, the 49ers can shift to the run game and lean on that part of that side of the ball. You don't have that in baseball. If your pitcher is getting shelled, by the time you bring in other pitchers, you could be too far behind to catch up because the other guy could be – I mean, Philip Humber once threw a perfect game. Philip Humber. I mean, who is Philip Humber? You know, his anniversary came up recently with that. And that's the thing with baseball is one guy can absolutely change the outcome of an entire game all by himself. And that doesn't happen as much in the other sports, which is why, you know, baseball, the old adage is you're only as good as your next day's starting pitcher. Yeah. I mean, nobody thought Don Larson was going to throw a perfect game in the World Series, but it happened. So anything can happen with baseball, which is why I agree. Like, an eight seed can totally take down a one seed just like that. You know, you fall behind five runs in the first inning, and it's a lot harder to come back from five runs down after one inning than it is 20 points down after one quarter in a basketball game.
Absolutely. I was taking a look at last year's standings, and not everyone hit 60 games on the same day, so it's a little hard to compare to the exact number. But a rough ballpark is June 4th of last year. So here's your National League standings, right? So you have the Dodgers at 43-19. See, that's 62 games, right? The next team, the Chicago Cubs, 33-26. That's 59 games. So there's going to be a little bit of variance here. But basically, 1 through 8 is Dodgers, Cubs, Brewers, Phillies, Braves, Rockies, Cardinals, Padres. So the Padres would be in as your number 8 seed. They were 31-30, just ahead of Arizona, who was 30-32. So you can see there's some mixing and variability there, which, you know, if you shave off a couple days, a couple games. In the American League, you have the Twins, Astros, Yankees, Rays, Rangers, Red Sox, A's, and then the Indians bringing up the rear at 30-30. So last year at this time, both 8 seeds were at basically right at 500. So
the one team you didn't mention is the Washington Nationals, who won the whole damn thing.
There you go. Oh, that's right. We talked about that last time, how they had such a crappy start. And here they are. They're sitting at 27-33, exactly at 60 games. They would have been, let's see, behind San Diego, 3.5 games behind the Padres at that time. Yep. So, yeah. So, yeah. There you go. You can point to that when the Giants don't win the World Series or make the playoffs this year. You can go like, well, they were just going to be the Nationals of 2019.
No, you can point to that when they do win it, though, because, you know, they could be the 8 seed. That's what I'm saying. Like, I swear to you, going into 2020, there's not a single thought in my mind of, oh, the Giants can make the playoffs. Oh, the Giants can contend, yada, yada, yada. Now, with a 66-game season, I'm like, hell yeah, if the Giants can put together a streak at some point, win, like, 15 out of 20 games, they could get into the playoffs. I could be watching playoff baseball this year. What the hell? Why not?
No, this absolutely increases the chances for all of the bad teams.
Right.
It definitely increases the chances for the San Francisco Giants to make the playoffs. In fact, last year, again, around that 60-game mark, the Nationals were third worst in the league. They were at that time just 1.5 games up on the Giants and 4 games up on the Marlins. So, yeah. Boy, that's crazy. See, I mean, that in itself is going to be interesting. I've already seen a lot of articles, and we've questioned it last week. Does this invalidate the World Series champion this year? Well, in some ways, I understand that argument because it's not a true test of a long season. But at the same time, they're all dealt the same hand. So if you're dealt the same hand, you're playing in the same sandbox, right? So everyone's got a shot, and if you don't win it, you didn't win it. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be, you know?
Yeah.
What are you going to say? But so, yeah, that's good news. I do want to say we do have a sponsor for this episode of TortureCast. It's Sports Betting Dime. And their betting section has the odds for the Major League Baseball season to be played. And what's really interesting is that, of course, I got this information prior to what happened this morning. But prior to this morning's event, yesterday, the odds went from minus 300 to minus 165. So that is considered the favorite, right? So it went from a 3-1 to down just to 16.5 or 1.65. So not good after Manfred said that he was not 100% confident that the season was about to start. But if you do want to take any of those proposition bets or fun bets and anything else that they put out, I would check out these odds, which I'm sure have changed already, and others at sportsbettingdime.com. So go check them out. I'm going to go check them out right after this podcast. I haven't looked at it because we started and all this stuff started hitting the wire. So pretty wild.
At the moment, it looks like they still have the June 15th odds on the board, which is after Manfred said that.
All right. So, yeah, I think they're going to take a day. These are the kind of bets that don't change by the hour. These are the bets that they
let's find out
probably at the end of the day.
Yeah, I clicked the link you put in there, but now I'm going to the MLB section, so maybe it did change because that was just no odds available. Okay.
Oh, no odds available. Okay, so check them out later tonight, maybe tomorrow. But again, that's sportsbettingdime.com. Okay.
So the Giants transitioning from possible baseball to future baseball. The draft was what? A week ago? A week and a half ago?
Yeah, about a week and a half ago. Down to 5 rounds now, which is very, very odd. But the Giants did have a little bit of a bonus this year because they did lose Madison Bumgarner and Will Smith to free agency. So they did get compensatory picks for that. So instead of 5 players, they actually got 7. So that wasn't too bad. First round, the Giants took catcher Patrick Bailey from North Carolina State. Farhan Zaidi said it was an easy decision to take him because he was the best player left on the Giants board. Quote, you don't draft for need and you can never have too much catching, he said. So a lot of people were a little bit upset in the sense of like, I don't understand. You have Joey Bart you just got. He's being groomed for the catcher. Why'd you draft another catcher? Well, the reality is he's a multi-tool player. He can play multiple positions. And a lot of people suspect that he's going to be converted to an infielder as opposed to a catcher. But he still has that ability. I mean, look at someone like Pablo Sandoval, right? He was traditionally a catcher coming up. In fact, I saw him play at Muni Stadium with the San Jose Giants. And he was the starting catcher for that day. And he was the next exciting prospect being groomed to be a catcher because this was also prior to Buster Posey's arrival as well. So, I mean, I watched him as a catcher. And, of course, he turned into a third baseman. So I don't know. What do you think about this pick? And, again, I don't think Eric and I know tremendous about any of these draft picks. So don't look to us to be the oracle.
No, but I didn't mind it. I don't mind them taking another catcher. I didn't mind Joey Bart being taken. I mean, the sad reality is 2-3 years from now, Buster Posey could be gone. Joey Bart might be the starter. And then we need somebody else waiting in the wings if yep. Bailey stays on as a catcher. So it's just the way baseball works. I mean, this isn't like this isn't like the Seahawks drafting a quarterback in the first round with Russell Wilson still under center. That's probably a bad analogy for our fan base. But, it's just a matter of depth. Baseball is always about depth. At least that's what they, tell us. And then they go and cut the draft and cut minor leagues and all that crap. So, but I like the pick. It's like Zaidi said, you don't draft for need and you can never have too much catching. Because you can't draft for need in baseball. Because you know what you need in baseball? Everything. So, with the second round pick, they went for Casey Schmidt, a third baseman from San Diego State University. But like I said, in baseball, you need everything. The interesting thing about Schmidt is he's not just a third baseman. He has the ability to pitch at the next level. But they really do think he's more of a hitter. He's right-handed, and in three college seasons, I see you wrote here, he slashed .296, .366, and .408 with six home runs. And then I just looked a step further. I heard something about his Cape Cod numbers. And he hit 5 home runs in the summer Cape Cod League last year. So he had 6 home runs over 3 seasons in college. And then when they switched to the wood bats at Cape Cod, he had 5 home runs in 36 games. I think that's kind of impressive as well. He actually had good pitching numbers, a 2.45 ERA in that league too.
Yeah, that's interesting to know that switching to the wood bat, he handled it all right. I was listening to Marty Lurie this weekend while I was painting my son's room. And he had Ron Wotus on and Bill Lasky on. And they were talking about the draft picks, not specifically each one by name relating to the story, but he was asking Ron Wotus, how was it for him transitioning to a wood bat when he was growing up? And then also, how was it for the kids these days? Like, does he see some of these players struggle? And, I was painting, so I wasn't paying attention to the entire conversation, but I do remember hearing bits and pieces of like, yeah, there are some players that just have that natural ability and they can come up and hit with everything, with anything. But there are others that just really do struggle with it because of the placement of the bat. I mean, obviously, as we all know, metal bats or even composite bats have bigger sweet spots and they're more forgiving. You can get jammed and still bloop it into right field. You hit off the end of the bat, same thing. It's not going to get shattered. It's not going to destroy your hands. With a wood bat, you get jammed. It's not going to go anywhere. It's going to be maybe a comeback to the pitcher as you shatter your bat. Same thing with the end of the bat. So you need to square it up more tightly. And he said he saw plenty of kids who came up because of the way they've deadened the aluminum and the composite bats now for safety's sake. He said for the most part, if you hit the sweet spot, he feels like the kids hit it just as far with a wood bat that they did with the metal bats. But again, it's about that placement and consistency. So he does see some players struggle. So that's a good sign if he had good stats in the Cape Cod League, which, of course, is that first exposure to wood bats.
Yeah, that's where a lot of the scouts, they do look to see how certain skills will translate to the major league level. There's a litany of stars that were also stars in the Cape Cod League, littered throughout history. And, it's the backdrop of the wonderful movie Summer Catch that I've never seen.
Very good. So they had another second-round pick. This was their first compensatory pick. They took pitcher Nick, and I don't know how to pronounce it, Swiney, I think. Could be Swinney. From North Carolina State, he has never had a problem racking up the strikeout totals as he collected 174 strikeouts in just 115 and a third innings in 3 collegiate seasons. So that's a great strikeout ratio. However, he has a career walk to walk to nine innings ratio of 4.3.
Yikes.
That over four walks a game. That's not good. So he's battled command issues at times. In his first two seasons, he split time between the rotation and the bullpen. However, he worked exclusively out of the rotation, his brief showing in 2020, where he demonstrated improved command. So, that's just not, I'm not saying the guy isn't good, obviously, just based off of reading about this, but certainly hope that they can coach him well enough to reduce that walk ratio.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that if he showed improvement in the rotation, it might mean that as his arm fatigues a little, he might actually get more accurate.
Yeah.
So they had the other, they had the other comp pick, and you know, they decided to please all of San Francisco. So not only do the 49ers have this guy, now the Giants have their own Jimmy G. They drafted shortstop Jim Glowenke of Dallas Baptist University. He had an outstanding career in college. In three seasons, the right-hander hit 340, 433, 506 with 17 homers and 100 RBI. So there you go. There's an example. 17 home runs over three seasons as a shortstop. And the other guy, Casey Schmidt, as a third baseman, had only hit a few and showed pop. So the Giants decided they needed their own Jimmy G. So shortstop Jim Glowenke of Dallas Baptist University. I'd never heard of Dallas Baptist University.
Yeah, me neither. So in the third round, they took a local boy from De La Salle High School. It's actually the sister or brother school, I should say, to where my wife went to school. She went to Carondelet, which is right across the street from De La Salle. And, of course, De La Salle had a movie made about them. They had that, still do, have a great football program where they went undefeated for 10 or 12 years or whatever it was, routinely just pounded. I went to Bellarmine, and we were a really good football team, but they usually crushed us. They picked up pitcher R.J. Dabovich. He was 7-1 overall with a 4.04 ERA and 64 strikeouts against 35 walks in 64 innings. He spent the majority of his college career. Oh, sorry, I just read the wrong guy. My apologies, everyone. I was like, that's not him. He's a high schooler.
For some reason, I can't see under R.J. Dabovich. So when you started saying that, I'm like, maybe if I close into it. Ah, there we go. More information. Yeah.
More information. Sorry. I was like, wait a minute. I know he was better than that. His stats were sparkling. So this is why this guy was signed out of high school. He went 21-1 with a 1.19 ERA and 192 strikeouts in his high school career. So this is one of those studs. This is one of those guys in high school that everyone kind of looked up to, one of those multi-talented athletes. So those are absolutely sparkling statistics. I know they paid him a lot, too, as far as the signing bonus. I don't have it in front of me, but I believe they gave him $5 or $6 million? Something. Wow. It was way higher than the slot. It's because they wanted to prevent him from declining and going to college. They wanted to sweeten the deal, essentially. So the Giants really do value this guy. They must see something special in him to throw that kind of money at him for such a young kid. But, you know, being that young, he's got a lot of time to develop, so I think we need to definitely keep an eye on him.
Yeah, but those are insane numbers. I mean, you said it. We totally all knew that kid in high school, and if not in our high school and the other high schools we played, when you just got dominated by the other team and you're just like, I remember facing Elk Grove, and this guy had a curveball. It's a different Elk Grove, obviously, than California. And this guy had this curveball, and like, we were all just stood there flat-footed. We couldn't do a damn thing about it, you know, and he just ran right through it. So Harrison's probably one of those.
Yeah, no, he sounds like a stud, so it's going to be fun to watch him come up. So fourth round, that's the guy who I was reading the info about. It's pitcher R.J. Dabovich from Arizona State University. He's the one who posted a 7-1 overall record with a 4.04 ERA and 64 strikeouts and 35 walks and 64 and two-thirds innings. So a strikeout per inning, that's fine. That's great. He did spend the majority of his college career as a reliever. So they're saying there's not much of a track record. However, he has proven that he has no problem getting opposing hitters to whiff, but he struggles a bit with command as well. And as you can see, 35 walks in 64 innings. Yeah. That's even a higher walk ratio than Nick Swinney. So again, they drafted four pitchers overall, I believe, but they need to work on a couple of guys' command, it looks like.
Yeah, it sounds like Hunter Strickland type numbers when you put it out there like that. is struggling with command. I mean, if you can get the whiff and you struggle with command, those guys are they're who coaches salivate over. That's who they want. They want to take a guy like Debovich and mold him into what they want. And then, like you said, they took a bunch of pitchers. In the fifth round, they took pitcher Ryan Murphy from Le Moyne College, again, somewhere I've never heard of. Murphy, despite the low profile, exactly, he's strung together a very impressive collegiate career. In three seasons, the right-handed pitcher is 16-9 with a 3.40 ERA and 215 strikeouts in 203 innings. So there you go. There's another one who's over a strikeout an inning.
Yeah, not bad. So now it's a brave new world, and I haven't been following all of the offers that may have been given to unrestricted free agents, but that's basically what baseball can do now.
Yeah.
As far as, this is not talking about international signings, but as far as domestic signings, you know that these guys have scouted a lot of players across the union, and they're probably throwing offers out at them right now. I do know the Giants, I had read, had already made a couple of offers, but they're in their $20,000 signing, you know, bonuses. That's all they get. So we talked about this last time, but this does seem like a weird way that baseball is essentially saving money. Instead of drafting someone in the sixth or seventh round where they normally have to maybe give them $50,000 or $100,000 in guaranteed money, now they just have to give them a lot less. So I'm still learning about the system. I don't fully understand what baseball is saving and how it's good for the game. I don't know that yet.
But doesn't seem good for the game to me. I mean,
not on the surface, but
yeah, it's kind of tough.
I don't know. I mean, it was agreed to by the Players Association, so I don't know what else to say. Maybe they're just okay with maybe it was the higher picks getting more money and the lower picks or the ones who are signed as unrestricted free agents signed for $20,000. Fine, so be it. At least they're getting a shot. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the part I can't put together either. I mean, they've killed some minor league ball. They've absolutely taken jobs and positions away. So I'm not sure how they're going to fill it all. I saw a nice thread. Different writers were pimping it about a guy who works with the Giants talking about why a free agent should come and sign with the Giants. And it talked about how progressive they are and how they will absolutely work with your mind and body and everything to get everything right as a baseball player and, you know, play to your strengths instead of just molding to exactly what it is they want you to do as a team. So I thought that was a good pitch I saw. And actually, shortly after I saw that, some pitcher from University of Illinois did sign with the Giants. Apparently he was having a good year to start out with. So, you know, you wonder if a guy like that had finished the year, he could have gotten drafted in the third round. But since the year didn't finish, the Giants get to pick him up for $20,000.
Yeah, yeah. And I know a guy, I don't have a list in front of me, but I know there's definitely some famous baseball players that were picked in lower rounds than the fifth.
Mike Piazza comes to
you. See, both of you and I. Mike Piazza right away, right? So I'm sure there's a list of these guys that someone's put out there that would be really interesting to look at saying, okay, well, this guy was drafted in the sixth, seventh, eighth, whatever round, and they ended up having a Hall of Fame career. Mike Piazza was like at the bottom of the barrel of the draft.
Like 63rd round. Well, here's the thing. If the draft had been five rounds back then the Giants don't lose to the Dodgers on the last day of the 93 season because Piazza never hits two bombs, and history has changed forever.
Oh my God! Thanks for tying a bow on that one. Wow, that's pretty good. No, it's true.
That's why we know Piazza, because it was beaten into our heads so much back then.
Oh, I know. It was beyond frustrating.
Friend of Lasorda's. Sorry.
Yep. No, they did him a favor. All that stuff. Yeah, but yeah. Now with the, you know, people can just be signed from wherever. I do wonder how that's going to affect history. Where, like, you know, 10, 15 years from now, we're talking about the next great. And they're like, he was an undrafted free agent,
right,
signed by the Giants in 2021 or whatever. You know, that's going to really be interesting, you know, because how many of these teams, I mean, look, they have these massive scouting departments and all these analytics. And I don't think any stone goes unturned. So I doubt there's going to be too many of these diamond in the roughs that no one knew about except for one scout who had a secret, you know, relationship with the family or something like that. But
right.
Yeah, maybe, right?
Yeah,
maybe,
it's not 1956 anymore. I mean, we got social media and videos and cell phones everywhere.
Yeah, and all those players are putting out their career tapes and video highlights, right. And all
I mean,
that
Driveline's
stuff.
Getting guys signed and drafted all over the place right now. Yeah. They've been doing absolutely fantastic work at getting teams, getting players promotion and video and showing what they can do. So, I mean, there is no more that one scout finding that one gem on the back roads of Mississippi, you know?
Exactly. No more. Those days are long.
Smoking gone. A cigarette in this parent's one bedroom house. I'll sign your kid for $15,000. I mean, you know, it just doesn't happen that way anymore.
Promising the glitz and glamour of the city, and we'll take care of you.
He'll be a star with the Dodgers.
Your parents will have a new house, and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's just not happening as much anymore.
So the Giants did finish up the bullpens in the outfield. So we saw some pictures of that a few days ago. I'll post them on our site, torchcast.com. But hey, you know, they look like your standard bullpen. It was interesting to see those fences that are in front of the bullpens. They are quite short. So I think you're going to see a lot of a few more robbed home runs potentially going into those bullpens. But other than that, nothing seemed too crazy about them. They just look at your standard outfield bullpens. I didn't get a good look, though, because they were all close-ups that Pavlovich had posted out there on what the garden looks like and how fans interact with the bullpens. I don't quite fully understand all that, but we'll see if they'll actually be used here next month. Possibility.
I mean, that's the other thing. We didn't even discuss that when talking about a season. Where are they going to play the games? They haven't even figured that out yet. I mean, we don't know any of those kinds of details.
No, not yet. That's true. I know last time we talked about when they were looking at all these various proposals because states were reopening, including California, that said, yes, pro sports can happen without fans, that the assumption was they're going to be playing in their own parks. The only question is how much travel are they going to do? They wanted to limit that, not just because the number of games are going to be limited, so that just naturally does that, but they don't want people flying all over the country to every single ballpark, just there's more points of contact, that kind of thing. But one of the reporters had tweeted out, I think they said, what was it, 64 games or something like that made sense because of the way it balances 12 games against your each of your divisional opponents, like 6 games against your league opponents, and then 3 games home and home. It's 6 games total, but 3 home and home between your local interleague rival, which would be the A's. So that would mean I don't like that, only in the sense of like I understand interleague and it's brought a lot to the game. But if they played 60 games and 6 of them are against the A's, that's 10% of their schedule. That seems pretty heavy.
That seems annoying as hell. We don't need to.
I mean, they'd be playing the A's, I would assume. Well, now it would be just as much as any other league rival or league team. So they'd be playing the Nationals 6 times. They'd be playing the A's 6 times. Yeah, that's weird. But whatever. Anything that brings us baseball is good. Yep. And then on kind of a sad note, former Cy Young Award winner Mike McCormick did pass away. At the age of 81, after a long battle with Parkinson's disease. Of course, he was the Giants' first Cy Young winner in 1967. And he's the only other one than Lincecum, of course, who won it in 2008 and 2009. He was definitely big and always around Giants events up until the last couple of years. I used to see him out there all the time. But that was... I didn't even know he was sick. I hadn't heard from him in a while. It was just one of those things where I didn't even realize.
Yeah, kind of that he's always at the events and then he's just not there and you just don't even notice. He was my answer to a trivia question for so long. Being a Giants fan among non-Giants fans, I knew Mike McCormick won the Cy Young in 67 just because something like that sticks with you when it's your team, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I used to use that as a trivia question all the time. I'm like, I bet you can't name the one Giant who's won the Cy Young Award since they moved to San Francisco. And everybody's like, Juan Marichal or, you know.
Right.
And I'm like, no, Mike McCormick. Who? Yeah, dude, yeah, exactly. Who? Like, I didn't know. You know, I'm 15 years old, 12 years old. What the hell do I know?
Yeah, I was reading up on his stats yesterday. And what I did not realize, because, you know, he played before my time and your time, that he originally played for the Giants. And his career kind of wasn't that great. And he got traded. And he played for several other teams for 6 or 7 seasons before coming back to the Giants. And that's when he won his Cy Young Award.
So, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he had kind of a long, kind of average-ish career prior to winning that Cy Young. He came back and he suddenly dialed everything in and dominated that year of 1967, kind of put it all together. So it's kind of cool to see that, because usually you don't see that in pitchers, right? They're usually better the younger they're in their career, not kind of at the tail end of their career. But
a la Tim Lincecum.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look at this guy. In fact, happy birthday to Tim Lincecum. He just turned 36 the other day, so there's a lot of social media buzz about that. And
oh,
it
yeah,
is weird.
Well, I was going to say a shout-out to Tyler Hall for getting Baseball Reference to change Timmy's picture from a Rangers picture to a Giants picture.
Yes, I saw that. That was great. I know, because every time I did that, I'd look up and I'm like, why is he in a Rangers hat? This sucks. He barely, you know, like, he signed with them. That's all he did, basically.
Yep.
Why is he in a Rangers hat? I mean, even an Angels hat would be more justifiable. But yeah, you know, again, Tim Lincecum, boy, what he did for this franchise cannot be forgotten. They wouldn't have won at least, you know, a couple of those championships without him. But yeah, like you said, it was really sad to see him kind of just diminish. He was definitely like a Marilyn Monroe, you know.
Yep.
Candle went out a little too soon on his pitching career, but it is what it is. I'm sure he's happy as a dog rolling in crap, you know. He's probably smoking a blunt as we speak. So.
that's his thing. Timmy will be Tim.
That's why San Francisco loved him. Timmy would just be Timmy. Nobody cared.
Yeah.
Nobody Although I gotta tell you, now that I live out west, it seems to be a lot of a West Coast attitude of just you do your thing, I'll do mine. Who cares? As long as we're all just cool to each other. And I've come to calling Henderson, Nevada, California East, because so many of y'all are moving here from the Bay Area. It's unbelievable. I see California license plates everywhere.
Yeah, coming in droves, for sure. I mean, I know a lot of people are personally sick of living in the Bay Area, not because of the quality of life, but because of the cost.
Yeah, it is. It's all cost. It's all cost-driven. It is. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, I totally – I get why Timmy was such a cult hero. I mean, he was a cult hero to me, and I didn't even live on the West Coast until 30-some-odd days ago.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? I love that you're out here, Eric. It's so awesome. So, yeah, we were talking before the show, and we were thinking about having a little short vacation in Vegas, and I'm sure we could probably socially distance down there at some point, but don't know if that's quite happening, but, you know, sometime soon. I do know that there's a lot of stuff happening in baseball, and we just encapsulated a little bit of it, but I think a lot may happen in the next couple of days, so I'm sure Eric and I will talk about it, but if there's something major happens, like, God forbid, a season is announced, we might hop on for a short torture cast coming in the next week or so, if that does happen.
Absolutely.
I'll be sure to let you know. Other than that, check out our normal resources at torturecast.com. If you're listening to this, you know where you get your podcasts. That's great. If you wouldn't mind giving us a, you know, review or rating on iTunes or wherever you do get your podcasts, that would definitely help us out. Don't forget to visit our sponsors page at sportsbettingdime.com. That's BETTINGDIME.com. Check them out. Let them know that you heard it from us. You can follow Eric at 2OutHits. That's with the number 2. Myself at ChadK21. Of course, collectively at TortureCast. Like us on Facebook. Do all those good things for us. We love it. And just to let you know, we are working with another sponsor, and so we have a lot of exciting opportunities and developments coming down the road, which I think we'll be announcing probably sometime in July, if not August. So look for that. It'll be great to get a sponsor on board and help our podcast and our product grow. I think there's some good potential there.
I mean, the sooner sports happens, the sooner that happens.
Exactly. It's all a sports related product. So unfortunately, the product isn't going to go anywhere without sports, and we're going to need your help. But it'll be great once we can launch that product. It'll be fantastic and help support the show, because as you probably know, we do this out of passion of being Giants fans. We are not paid. We don't get money for this. We do this out of our own time. We got to pay to upkeep, you know, the webpage, the domain, the podcast hosting services, all those things, obviously the equipment we've purchased. So things will be coming in the future that might help us support those little yearly annual costs a little bit. But yeah, look for that to come soon. Eric, you got anything else?
Nope, not at all. Just everybody stay safe, wear a mask when you go out in public, and be good to each other.
Wear a mask. It's not hard, people. Not hard. All right, that'll do it for episode 196. We'll see you I don't know. Maybe in a few days, maybe not. For episode 197. Until then, a-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.